This is John B. Calhoun. I know, not a face or a name many of us know these days, but he was a scientist, and he had an enormous impact on our culture. You see, beginning back in the 1950s, Calhoun did research for the National Institutes of Mental Health, first with rats and then with mice. He built room-sized pens, gave those animals enough food and water and bedding, kept them safe from predators and disease, and just watched them grow. And grow they did. Their populations grew and grew and grew until they were crowded together. And what had started out as utopia became a rodent hell. For when all the available space was taken and the social roles of mouse society were filled, the competition and the stress caused a breakdown of social behaviors and the demise of the population. Unable to breed, the population plummeted and did not recover. The crowded rodents had lost the ability to coexist harmoniously. At certain density, they had ceased to act like rats and mice, and the change was permanent. Or so wrote Calhoun in an article called Population Density and Social Pathology. It was published in the Scientific American in 1962, along with this picture. That paper made Calhoun and his rodents famous. For the next decade, that one article was cited upwards of 150 times a year, and it since has been included as one of the 40 studies that changed psychology. Calhoun is right there with Freud and Pavlov, Milgram, Skinner, and Rorschach. Not the usual fate for something published in Scientific American. But Calhoun's work appeared just as interest in population growth and the troubles of crowded inner cities was peaking. And Calhoun's language was not dry, scientific jargon, but always dramatic, even poetic. With him writing, the connection between mice and men was easily made. And then writers like Tom Wolfe and Desmond Morris of The Naked Ape extended and embellished what he had written in that one article. And the stories of Calhoun's rats being crowded into depravity entered the cultural imagination as a vision of the horror that was waiting humankind. Now, although this very early work remains a touchstone for those who choose a gloom and doom worldview, Calhoun was dedicated to understanding and ameliorating the ill effects he had seen. And until he retired in 1983, he kept redesigning his rodent utopias, hoping to develop more collaborative and intelligent communities. Now, if you don't know much about mice society, let me tell you that they are hierarchical and competitive. There are always tops and middles and bottoms. And in these utopias, as the population increased, everyone was stressed. But they all responded in different ways. Some, always the middles or the bottoms, exhibited an unrodent-like ability to innovate. They became creative. And those who seemed most resilient to the stress of their worlds, the winners in these rodent hells, had 12 important social relationships. 12 friends, if you will, who seemed to inoculate them and make them resistant to the world they knew. Now, these particular insights were taken up and furthered by architects and urban planners who now, because of Calhoun, have a much more nuanced sensitivity to the relationship between space, behavior, and well-being. Think of hospitals. There was a time when hospitals were filled with large wards with many beds. And then the newer ones were built with rooms of two or three beds. Bethesda West just opened. Brand new hospital in our neck of the woods. It only has private rooms. That change is due to Calhoun. He was an optimist. Oh, wait. What Calhoun saw in his mice, he really expected to see in humankind. His more hopeful message did finally make it into popular culture, but not quite with the same punch. But those stories really were based, drawn off of his research. He was an optimist. He thought people were positive animals, that even the pressures of density would create innovation and complexity. He wrote, "As physical space declines, humans will extend their conceptual space, their network of ideas and technologies, enabling more efficient use of resources while ensuring that each individual maintains the number of relationships they need." In 50 years, our frightening images have certainly changed. I mean, the Hunger Games has replaced a Clockwork Orange or Soylent Green. Sea level rise and climate change is overshadowing population growth as the global problem. But the anxiety remains. And Calhoun's insights into the foundations of rodent resilience could be, and I think is, a metaphor for a hope that we need today. So there are two notions I want you to ponder along with me, for I think they have an awful lot to say about the possibilities that are sitting quietly right here in this very room. Now, the first one is to remember that, for mice at least, innovation and creativity came from those individuals with little hierarchical power. Remember, it was the middles and the bottoms, not the tops, who found new answers to old problems. And when I watch the nonsense going on in Washington, this idea gives me hope. And it gives me hope when I look at institutions like this fellowship. Look, let's face it. This fellowship, even the whole of the UUA, could not, no matter how rosy your glasses, be considered a top in the American universe today. I mean, I listen to colleagues bemoan the fact that we UUs are not as numerous as the Baptists and not as wealthy as the Catholics. And I listen to the movers and shakers around here as they look for ways to get our own message out, to connect with our neighbors who would be inspired and delighted by all the good that's here. And I know they're right. The world needs us. So don't get me wrong here. I am not undermining the board. A congregation twice our size would, in fact, still be small. My point is, there is a freedom in this small size. And if Calhoun's insights are true, then standing apart from the powers that be, being a middle or a bottom in a hierarchy, is necessary to open up that conceptual space. It's necessary to foster creativity that will allow a society to grow towards wholeness despite challenge and change. So, if your friends and neighbors see you as a religious oddball because you're part of this small faith community? Rejoice in it. Do your best to explain what it is to be a UU, but if you're not getting through, relax and let it go. Come back into this community where others will encourage and support you as you live out the faith you already know. For that is where the power to change the world begins. And have no doubt, my friends, it is a saving power. Now, the second notion I want you to consider is Calhoun's idea of that optimal number of relationships. For both rodents and people, he thought it was 12. Now, I'm sure he had reams and reams of notes taken by himself and his assistants to prove this, but I suspect it's one of those truths that may not turn out to be quite so precise. For 12 has always been a magic number, a number that confers coherence on complexity. And we human beings seem to find it anywhere. Zodiac signs, 12 months of the year. Our days are divided into two sets of 12 hours. There were 12 gods on Olympus, 12 labors of Hercules. Odin had 12 sons, as did Jacob, each one the father of the 12 tribes. Jesus had 12 apostles. And for Shia Muslims, there are 12 imams. This is one of the beliefs that distinguishes them from the Sunnis. In Hinduism, the god Sura has 12 names, and there are 12 petals in the Anahata, the heart chakra. So it may not really be 12. It may be 8 or 9, or 14 or 15. But each of us depends on a set of relationships if we are to feel whole enough to keep on moving through our lives. And within this circle of care, hierarchies don't matter at all. We are seen and held for who we are. On the wheel of each of our lives, some of our spokes go out to family, the folks life gave us and the family we chose. And some spokes certainly belong to treasured friends, but some go to companions or mentors who stay for a while and then move on. This is one of the reasons why congregations like this are so important. For even to folks who think of themselves as modern and secular and not spiritual at all, this is a place to fill out that wheel. And this is why, after their initial 10 years, most congregations can't be killed with a stick. Bad preaching, bad management, lean times, they don't go under the way a business would. For here, people keep each other's wheels round. People keep each other going forward. Our fifth principle says the right of conscience and the use of democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. And I'll bet when you all first read them, either in the front of the hymnal or on a poster in one of the classrooms, you mentally checked it off the list and said, oh yeah, right, got that. Basic fairness, an affirmation of that American ideal of one person, one vote. Been around a little bit longer, and it might make you think of Robert's rules and lunches delayed. But that's just a form we use for a deeper truth. For the democracy we would practice here is very different from the political process we live with out there. In here, our governance is spiritual. Our democracy begins with that first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and it is about something much more than fairness. It goes deeper than checks and balances. It is, I think, an attempt to bring the power of 12 into an even larger circle of care. Oh, I know. In some ways, we are very much like every other institution out there. We elect leaders, the board and the endowment committee. We raise people up and put them in charge, if they're willing. We have employees. And like a business, we pay bills, fret over the income, and develop our own best practices. The world out there may be divided into innumerable permutations of them and us. But in here, it is only us. And we would make a life together as equals. Stand for election around here, and you will gain no power, find no hidden perks, just more responsibility, and the opportunity for a sense of satisfaction that comes from serving well. Around here, staff are actually pledging members and volunteers as well. And the only obstacle to starting something new around here is getting a room on the day you want. The biggest challenge, getting the word out loud enough and long enough to be heard by people with incredibly busy lives. That is a power of 12. That is a way of being with each other unlike any other in the world. So stay today and dance the maypole. Or if the ribbons run out, circle round and watch as others do. Come back later and help clear the grass for the labyrinth. Don't be fooled by the food, the laughter, the delights of this community. For we are, and we mean to be, a very subversive lot. Here, each of us is important as we dance the circle of our lives and make each other whole. Here, we keep the world moving on.